Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hello, everyone. You know, there is so much to discuss in room 4216 today.
Then let's go ahead and go right in and do it. So in our study today and in the weeks to come, we're going to be moving back to the Old Testament and be looking at the books that follow Genesis and Exodus. What was the fancy word that you have them called by?
Torah.
Torah. And what's Torah mean? Torah. It's not at the bull race. No.
No, it is not.
Stampede.
No, it means the teaching.
The teaching.
Yeah.
Now, we usually think of teaching as do's and don'ts. Is that what this
is
about?
Somewhat, yes. It is it's God teaching his people how to live. Some would call it the law.
Okay. Yeah. Which comes to mind, because one of my daughters moved back home just a month or so ago.
And, uh-oh.
It's kind of, it's been gone for a while. And well, you know, we do it this way and we keep things here. And did you ever have that experience coming back from college
yes,
or something?
I have.
And you almost have to relearn how to live in that house because of the patterns and the way they live, the times they eat, where you put the garbage and just stuff.
Exactly. Not to mention they have to learn to live with you. I remember once I wanted to order a pizza for dinner. Uh-huh. My parents were having something else and it was, oh, don't order a pizza. You're just spending money. Just eat what we're eating. I didn't want that. I wanted the pizza.
In a way, that's what the book of Leviticus is. The people had come out of Egypt, out of a land where they worship multiple gods. Mm-hmm. And God was teaching them how to live, worshiping not multiple gods. And they could have just transposed the way they worship their multiple gods to Yahweh. But God was saying no, because it's not that way. And so the book of Leviticus in particular talks about the way that we communicate with God a little bit with each other. But we're going to find in the other books then how we communicate with each other and how we live. In some ways, you might summarize the book of Leviticus as the worship of God. Even as worship today has certain framework, those who are Roman Catholic and Lutheran and Presbyterian know that there's liturgy and mm-hmm. a kind of a form and a structure. And if you pay attention to what's done, it's not just a liturgy, but you enter God's presence, you praise him, you hear his word, you petition him, and then you hear an explanation of the word, and then you confess about what you believe, that's the Apostles' Creed or Nicene Creed, mm-hmm. and then you receive a meal. I mean, there's kind of a pattern, and that's what God's doing in the book of Leviticus, is setting up a pattern of worship for the people so that they might be holy. Because that's the one thing God says. You must be holy, even as I'm holy. If you're going to be my people, you got to be holy.
What does the name Leviticus mean?
It's the named after Levi, who was one of the 12 tribes of Jacob.
Yeah.
And he was
one of the 12 sons of Jacob.
Sons, and they became tribes because they got to be so many people. And the people of Levi then were the ones who did the most of the work in the preparation and work of worship. And we know that Leviticus, like Genesis and Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, were all written by Moses.
If you've been with us since Exodus, you'll remember that there were all kinds of instructions on bring thus and such many shekels of gold, and thus and such many shekels of silver, thus and such many yards mm-hmm. of linen. Mm-hmm. Why did God inspire Moses to write all those things? We don't have a temple like that today.
All these things lead us up to one very specific point. And we're going to find that meaning when we get to chapter 16, which will be just a little bit later. We're going to talk about some of the offerings and sacrifices first in general, but we will get to chapter 16 in this lesson today, and we'll find out the meaning for all those specific things.
This is Dinah Bath Kitchen reporting for station YNAM, and I am so excited because, you see, today we are going back to the very first worship center of the Israelites. It was a tabernacle, a tent at first, you know, and they used it when they traveled all around that awful desert for 40 years. But later, a beautiful temple was built. Oh, it must have been wonderful. Well, we'll see in a moment. And it had all kinds of gold and wonderful curtains, and what a wondrous place to worship. What is that odor? Oh my goodness, it's like fire, blood, and very badly cooked flesh. Oh, there's someone official. Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry to trouble you, but can you please explain what is going on here? I thought this temple would be so beautiful, but it's not. There's organs over there, and fat, and the smell is terrible, and how do you even breathe?
These are the smells that please God.
The smells that please God? How could that be possible?
People have given from their livelihood, from their earning, asking God to forgive them. They are burnt so they will not have them back.
God loves these awful odors? And this disgusting mess?
What God sees as an ugly mess is our lives. And the smell in his nostrils that is such a stench are our deeds. These are given to him, trusting that he will forgive our sin.
But isn't this a waste? I mean, all this good meat, well, it was good once, couldn't that be given to the poor, or even used to feed the priests who work in the temple?
Some of these gifts are to the priests, and are there to feed them, but the first and the best portion must be given to God, and therefore it must be burned.
How wonderful that God would provide a way of forgiveness, even now. But tell me, sir, what if the temple weren't there? What if it got destroyed or something? What would you do then?
Adam and Eve were given clothes by God to cover their nakedness and shame. Abraham was asked to sacrifice his son, and when God saw he was willing, God stopped him and provided a ram. All these sacrifices point to a time when God himself, through the Messiah, will provide the perfect sacrifice to take away all the sins of the world.
This is my problem.
What's that?
Understanding the sacrificial system. So much of the Old Testament revolves around sacrifice.
All of it, really.
We just don't have quite the same equivalent today.
No, we don't. For example, if I say, Cecilia, I want you to sacrifice something, what would be your first thought?
Okay. Not eat out a couple of times, and I'm to give that money to the church.
Yeah. Or we sometimes will say, oh man, did I ever sacrifice? It just means, like you say, giving from our extra.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah. That's not what's meant here by sacrifice. You know, we're familiar with Bible pictures of God relating to us, like forensic. He declares us righteous. That's like a court system. The judge says you're free. You're free.
Mm-hmm.
Or the marketplace. If you owe a debt, you got to pay it. And if you have a credit too high, you won't be able to buy anything, and you're thrown in the slammer, you know, the credit card. But if someone pays it all off, boom, you're free, and you're no longer in debt. We understand those pictures, and there's several other pictures that are given in the New Testament. Rescuer, redeemer, that'd be like drowning in a lake.
Mm-hmm.
The Old Testament is filled with this idea of sacrifice. And here's where it really starts, is with Leviticus. And that's why the book of Leviticus is so hard, and why I really didn't want to do Leviticus.
No.
We got to talk about this, and it's all the sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the down and dirty simple of sacrificial system. God is holy. His people are to be holy. Well, oops, people sinned, so they're no longer holy. You know what God says should be done with those people?
Cut them off. They're dead.
Yep. Cut them off. Dead. Punish. Rather than doing it immediately to the people, God says, I'll give a substitute. And so an animal is brought, and the sins are transferred from the people to the animal, and the animal dies, a life for a life. And all of this was to point to the ultimate sacrifice. Even as we read back in Genesis 22, where Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son, which pointed to God the Father willing to sacrifice his son Jesus, and did so. So these sacrifices also point to Jesus and how he would be our perfect substitute.
Yes.
In the last segment, I did mention that these offerings, sacrifices of Leviticus, all point to Jesus, the promised Messiah. And I don't say that just arbitrarily. We'd like to read a section of scripture that underscores that vividly for you and me, so that as we then look back at Leviticus, we'll always keep in mind that it's pointing to Jesus. And when you hear the phrase in the first line, the law, think of all the sacrifices of Leviticus. You could almost even hear it say the laws of Leviticus. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 to 7.
The law is only a shadow of the good things that are coming, not the realities themselves. For this reason, it can never, by the same sacrifices repeated endlessly year after year, make perfect those who draw near to worship. If it could, would they not have stopped being offered? For the worshipers would have been cleansed once for all and would no longer have felt guilty for their sins. But those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sins, because it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased." Then I said, "Here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, O God."
Okay, Cecilia, let's go on with the
next... Pastor Dave.
We've talked about sacrifice, so let's go on.
I'm sorry, but we've got to do more with this. I mean,
well, now Leviticus actually goes chapter by chapter with sacrifice by sacrifice. You want to do that?
Well, sort of. I've been doing research.
That's going to get long and boring.
Not this. I found a great article called The Five Offerings in the Old Testament.
Okay, if you can do it in a sentence or so each, go ahead. Chapter 1.
The purpose of the burnt offering was a general atonement of sin, as well as an expression of devotion to God. the animal sacrifice was completely burned overnight, except for the skin, which was given to the priests.
Okay. Chapter 2, the next sacrifice.
The purpose of the grain offering was, again, to express devotion to God, thanking him for his goodness and constant care. The grain was baked, roasted, or fried. It was seasoned with salt and never contained honey or yeast. Only a portion was burned, and the rest of it was given to the priests.
Seems like a very simple, almost everyday type of conversation with God. Okay.
Yeah.
Chapter 3.
The purpose of the fellowship offering was kind of like saying grace before a meal, especially one shared in unity with others.
Chapter 4.
The fourth sacrifice, the sin offering, is sometimes called the purification offering because its purpose was to purify oneself to re-enter the presence of God.
That does make sense. We talked about being holy, being pure before God. Okay.
And we'll talk more about some of these things that they'd need to purify from later in the book.
Okay. Chapter 5.
The guilt or trespass offering wasn't meant to ease a guilty conscience, but it was more like a reparation, a paying back of a debt to others. And for that reason, it could be an animal or money itself, 20% of which was given to the priests for the work that they did.
That makes sense. That helped provide for their daily goods. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And that is a basic summary. If you want to know more, there's certainly more to this article, and we'd be glad to share it. Well, that takes care of chapters 1 through 5 of Leviticus.
Mm-hmm.
So now, on to chapter 6. Do I get to read a whole bunch?
No, because chapters 6 through 8 tells the priest how to handle the offerings made, like what do you do with the ashes? How long should it be burnt? What should be kept for priests' use and whatnot?
It's interesting stuff, but it's not things we absolutely must go through here. Is that right?
Correct. That's right. We find also the next following chapters, 8 through 15, are also easily summarized.
Yeah, like chapter 8 deals with the consecration of the priests.
Chapter 9, the Lord accepts Aaron's offering.
Chapter 10, the penalty for disobedience.
And then 11 through 15 is a manual of purities to be done by the priests.
Purities. Things like skin disease or eating of meat, childbirth, and cleansing of a house. All of this dealing with the priests.
So that they could serve and offer these sacrifices.
That's right.
Brings us up to chapter 16, which is not only the center of the book of Leviticus, but it is the heart and center of the whole sacrificial system, the Day of Atonement. And we thought we'd bring you a portion of a reading from a Bible study called Lifelight, which describes this day extremely well.
It's written by Pastor Kevin Parviz of Congregation Chayvei Shalom. He's been on our podcast before. And it's read by Eric Bentley on the Burning Bush Ministries, Los Angeles, YouTube channel.
Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. It is a fast day. No food is eaten. On this day, there will be a death. For God has decreed that there will be a sacrifice on this day. The sacrifice will be unlike any other throughout the year, because today the high priest intercedes for the people with God, and the sacrifices he offers make atonement for all their sins. Leviticus 16 tells us all the details. The high priest begins with a young bull and 2 goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He first slaughters the young bull as a sacrifice for the sins of himself and his household. Then the priest takes two goats and presents them before the Lord. He casts lots for the goats. One is chosen for the Lord, and the other is the scapegoat. The Lord's goat is slaughtered as a sin offering for the sins of the people. The high priest sprinkles blood from the bull and the goat on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, the atonement cover, to make an atonement for the most holy place, the temple and the altar, because of the uncleanness and rebellion of God's people. Then he applies some on the horns of the altar to cleanse it from the uncleanness of the people. The scapegoat is taken out amongst the people, where the high priest places his hands upon it and confesses the sin of all the people, thus transferring them to the scapegoat. The goat is then led out into the wilderness to die. Finally, the burnt offering is made amongst the people. The ram is sacrificed to make atonement for the priest and all the people. It is burned along with the fat from the slain bull and the goat, whose bodies are taken outside the city gates and burned. The conflagration is complete. The sacrifices have been made. The blood has been shed and has covered the sins of the people for another year. The scapegoat is alone in a strange place with no food and at the mercy of those who would kill it, waiting. The people are joyous because they have once again been affirmed in their covenant with God. Through no work of the people except for the offering they have brought before him, God has once again turned away his wrath and granted forgiveness. Imagine how this man, Jesus, in AD 29, felt as he came to the temple year after year and witnessed this command of God. He knew, as he saw the slain animals and smelled the blood, that he was the perfect sacrifice. For how could the blood of animals cover the sins of the people?
With all this talk about sacrifice, I'm reminded of some verses in Matthew where Jesus is at Matthew's house and the Pharisees are grumbling about, he eats with sinners and tax collectors. And Jesus says, you don't need a physician to heal the healthy. You need a physician to heal the sick. And he says, learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Well, yeah. What does all this mean?
At first glance, it almost looks like he's throwing it out. Not really. Do you ever have to go to the laundromat to clean your clothes? You punch in the quarters?
Oh, sure.
Or maybe a vending machine to get some soda?
Yes.
Well, that's what the Old Testament people, I'll just do the sacrifice and God will take care of me. There, I've done my weekly duty. Now I can go off and sin some more because it'll be taken care of next week.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost looked like the people were using the sacrificial as a vending machine. Put your quarter in, get your forgiveness out. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jesus was trying to say. It's not that he was getting rid of sacrifices, but the point behind the sacrifice was that their heart be there. Well, people don't have mercy, compassion on people unless their heart is there. And that's what Jesus was trying to say. It's okay to be good and righteous, but I want your heart. I want you to be with me because I do that. I have mercy on those who don't deserve it. And with that, we really don't have much time left. So
we better hurry and get the address in because
right is at
info
at
not-alone.net.
And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.